Hello, everyone. Welcome to an action-packed, non-stop express ride here on ARG Presents. Do you like games? Do you like high-pitch, high-fast, super graphic games? This is the show for you. I'm Amigo Aaron, joined by a man that, unfortunately, much like today's subject matter, is old, slow, archaic. We call him good old punch card Brent. How's it going, Brent?
I am from the 70s. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm pumped. I'm amped. I'm ready to rock and roll. I can't be stopped today because we spun the wheel, Brent. We made the exciting, the incredible deal last week.
The unholy deal.
Thanks to your forethought, your deep study, we will be playing games on a system that gets a little coverage. It's a crime. It's a crime that the games haven't been seen until today. But today, we will unveil these games, Brent, because, ladies and gentlemen, I give you the NASCOM. The NASCOM 1 and 2, Brent.
Before we got into this, if someone would have said, hey, Brent, what's a NASCOM? I would have said, that's a NASA thing, right?
Yes,
which it actually is. With an extra S, I believe.
Yeah.
But if they would have been like, no, man, it's like a kick computer from the 70s, I'd been like, oh? But after learning about it and seeing some of the people in this community that are incredibly passionate about these little things, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing that these things ever existed and that there are still some functional in the world.
You've got to be passionate about the NASCOM, Brent, as we are, of course. So if you're like me, when this came up on the wheel last week, well, my first thought was, let's strangle Brent. That was my first thought. And then as the week rolled on, I left strangling and went straight to stabbing. Because emulating this was not easy. This
it was
an 11th. It was. I will say, Brent saved us at the 11th hour. I had tried. There were two or three emulators for this. You got a Java one. You've got one that was made for the Windows 95 and 98. That was a prominent one, by the way.
Yeah.
And then you've got MAME support, and I use that as loosest sense. And I couldn't get Jack Squat to run on this machine. And then Brent showed up. I don't know how you did it, Brent, but he did find something that had some games. And so we were able to look over some games of the NASCOM. Let's learn about this, and then we'll talk about the games we're going to take a look at today. So if you're like me, you've never heard of this thing. This was a kit computer, Brent.
Yes.
Which, explain to the people what that means exactly.
You send them money, and they send you a pile of parts and tell you to have a good old time. You basically have to Lego your computer together before you can use your computer.
Correct. Now, this was, of course, a UK joint because, hey, and we didn't know that either, by the way. This came out around 78, and it was put together by a fellow named Chris Shelton. Now, he was basically approached by an outfit called NASCO, Brent. NASCO stands for the North American Semiconductor Company, which, hilariously, is British. So much like U.S. Gold, a British company named North American something always gets me. But they approached him, and they worked out a deal for him to put this kit computer together. It's funny, I read a couple articles about this Chris Shelton. You don't hear him talked about with your Klaus and Claire's, that, you know, that in that company. But this guy really was sort of an innovator.
So close, Aaron. He was so close to being there.
And the funny thing is, when you look into NASCOMs 1 and 2, and there was a 3, these actually developed into pretty capable, fairly modern for the time machines.
Absolutely. I mean,
these things right out of the gate, it's not like they were duds, and you could put them together. So just to give you a quick look at what these things were. So I'm going to look, we'll look at the NASCOM 1. There are some subtle differences between the two. So one thing you're going to understand about the NASCOM is these didn't come with a case. Okay. You literally built the motherboard and hooked up the keyboard. And then you were expected to either make a case or do what I would have done, which is set the naked computer on your desk surrounded by old Mountain Dew cans and the remnants of yesterday's pizza. And almost inevitably you would have dumped stuff on the board. Again, these came out in 78. A Z80 processor, Brent, 1 or 2 megahertz speed on these things. Now, originally, the NASCOM 1 shipped with a K of RAM, a K of VRAM, and 1 or 2K of ROM.
Yeah.
The text modes on this, 48 characters by 16. Of course, it was monochrome, but we'll get into that in a minute. It had a TV UHF video interface. But again, the one thing about this kit computer was, is that these things were heavily modified
by people.
Now, this kit didn't come with a power supply. You had to pull that out. And you could get all sorts of additional, I.O. for it.
Yes.
You're looking at the time of release, when this thing was going for just about 200 pounds. Which, if you think about it, this is the era where computers cost $18 kajillion.
Yeah, yeah, it was rarely reasonable at the time.
Yeah, so this ended up being a pretty big deal in the UK. I mean, it did quite well, and they, like I said, these kit computers, people would take them, and they would put them in all sorts of different cases. When I was looking this thing up, it was amazing the amount of cases you could find for this thing. People would make them out of metal. They would make them out of wood.
Yep.
Much like you did. It's that they looked way better because they would stain the wood, make it look nice. They had all sorts. These came in all, and so like I said, some people just had them in a box, laying there. But people, it's funny, I was reading the comments on some of these, and people were saying like, oh yeah, I developed a sound card for my NASCOM. Oh yeah, I developed a color graphics card from an ASCOM or an adapter or whatever. So these were heavily edited, and you're talking to people that would buy something like this were your top shelf geeks of the day.
Pioneers. These people were pioneers because, as computers have evolved, they started at a lot of these put together at home computers before our time, obviously. We never did anything like that. And then
I did do kits. I'm not computers, but I put together my own multimeter. I put together my own crystal radio, that stuff. So they were still, but those sorts of kits are not on the same level as this. Yeah,
exactly. And then if you flash forward, a couple decades, we fought with our queues and, that kind of settings, having to manage your own RAM and stuff.
Yeah.
So we experienced that era of computing. Completely different level. I'm not even comparing the two. I'm just saying the flow of technology. And then today, what's hard to do on a computer, right?
Yeah.
It's completely been refined. So yeah. My hat's off to all these NASCOM owners who not only successfully assembled their kits, but the ones who modified them and added to them and, tweaked this and tweaked that and shared that information. Because it all boils down. It's all part of the history of computing.
It's funny because I was reading out why NASCO decided to get into this thing. And basically, from what I read, they looked at the people at NASCO, looked at America and saw all the different user groups over here and all the little computer user groups that were around. And they didn't see the same thing in the UK. And they thought, heck, we could get that kind of action. We could get on the ground floor. And that was sort of their basis for putting this together. And I think it worked. Listen to this, Brent. To assemble this thing, of course, why did they sell it as a kit? To minimize the cost, okay?
Yes.
Here's where they minimized it. To assemble the NASCOM 1, you had to hand solder about 3,000 joints on that circuit board.
Crazy, isn't it?
Now, that's a lot of soldering, especially when soldering's come a long way too in terms of the irons and stuff from back in those days. So that's a lot of action. These things could do a lot of stuff amongst the things they could do. You could get BASIC for them, Pascal, C, Forth. They had a lot of different programming languages that were like ported over to them.
And a lot of people wrote their own assemblers.
Yeah, yeah. This was... You're right. I mean, really, this kind of shows you how much different things are than they used to be in terms of working on this sort of thing.
Real quick, I want to go over a story I heard while I was researching this stuff. There was a guy that had bought a kit, right? And he tried to put it together, and he never got it functioning, right? So he put it in a box, and he wasn't really in with one of these communities. But, when people found out you had a NASCOM or a kit, they kind of said, oh, you know, how's it going? You know, how are you working with it? And the guy was like, yeah, I'm going to sell it for parts. I can't get it working. And they said, no, let's look at it. Let's sit down. Let's get it together. And it was a community effort. It was a community effort to get this guy's computer up and running. And it was such a moving story about how basically complete strangers were at this dude's house. And it's like, oh, okay, I see a problem here. You know, I know this needs to go over there. And got the computer completely assembled for this dude. And they worked on a case and got him up and running and got him, you know, a computer from a broken pile of parts. That really talks about the community that was going on at this time.
Hey, listen, I don't want to toot our own horn here. Meep, meep. That's kind of feeling I get about our family here. I can't tell you how many times we've sent crap up to like Jason Warren, for example, or got technical support. So the spirit of those computer pioneers lives on.
Absolutely, I agree.
There you go.
There are definitely pockets of people who are still out there helping each other, making this stuff work, and it's endearing. It really is. It's an impressive community, and it's amazing to see what it has grown out of and what it has become. The spirit is certainly still there.
Let's talk about the successor. When the NASCOM 1 discontinued in 79, here comes the NASCOM 2. And you can see, if you're watching at home, this picture is another homemade case for the NASCOM 2. Now, the NASCOM 2, again, released in 79, this had built-in Microsoft Basic right out of the gate. Of course, you got your keyboard. This had a Zilog Z80A, 4 megahertz. So you've got a double the processing power, effectively. 9K of memory, expandable up to 32K. And trust me when I tell you, they expanded it further. 1K of video RAM, 10K of ROM, right? Because you've got Basic built in. You do have a graphics mode on this one, which is nice. This one does have a serial line on it. You've got the ability to load off cassettes, you know. So this was a substantial upgrade in a lot of ways. But you kept the compatibility there, this was 18 months later. Basically, it took them 18 months to get this thing figured out. But you've really expanded the heck out of this thing, and you've got something hot looking computer here.
Yeah.
Now. The sad thing
is... They didn't all look that good, by the way.
No, they did not. Like I said, you've got computers that look like someone like, let's say, Retro Man Cave put them together, and then you've got something that looks like the Sketchy Tech put it together. I'll let you know. And this what we're looking at here is more of your Retro Man Cave. Unfortunately, here's 79. NASCOM has literally released a Triumph. Okay? I mean, this is quite a machine.
Yes.
This thing has the ability to support memory cards, graphics cards, floppy disks, the whole enchilada. So what you've got here is a proper computer. And sure enough, in 1980, NASCOM Limited, the company, met with difficulties in getting components, specifically RAM. And so eventually this did them no favors. And eventually they were sold to Lucas Limited. Now, as we were researching this, I kept coming across things called the Lucas NASCOM. That's where this comes from, because the NASCOM, as a computer company, was sold to Lucas. And so eventually, they had a cased version of the NASCOM 2 that ended up being the NASCOM 3.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it was a NASCOM 2 with a case, right?
Right. And if you're watching at home, the picture on the screen, that is the innards. That's basically the board for a NASCOM 2, and really the 2 and the 3 were effectively the same thing. Now, with all that said, there were games released for this. Now, we sort of went over the gory details about how difficult it was for us to emulate this. Now, the funny thing about this is, once you understand the basics of the NASCOM, you would think it's difficult. The problem I had basically was getting the emulators to understand how to accept the media that I was trying to give it, cassettes and discs and whatnot. the commands you type in are nutty. You know, it's early DOSy type stuff that you have to sort of learn. Just running stuff requires you to run, like, you would type in like a memory address to get to run. Like, there's one common one that you would type in to get stuff to work. So the learning curve was high. Now, Brent, I believe you told me there were 42 games released on this thing.
It was something like that. Yeah. And the thing is a lot of the games have been made within the last decade.
A lot of the really amazing ones.
Yeah.
None of the ones we played were
no,
made there.
No, no. I believe ours were all of the era, or, you know, mid-80s.
Yeah. Now, I've got a list here of the games. And one thing you're going to realize, and this seems to be the way it is on a lot of these really, really old computers, is that what you've got a lot of are ports, just are arcade clones. All right. And so I think everything we're playing today, except that's not true. We've got one in there that's original. But you've got a lot of ports, and you've also got a lot of text adventures.
Yes.
Right. And all the ones you would expect to have been ported in the early days were ported over. But I mean, you've got stuff like the old Eliza that's on here, you know, the old talk to the psychiatrist thing. Lord, you know, you've got stuff like Othello and Pac-Man, you know, stuff like that. I mean, stuff you would expect to see on one of these things. You've got to have a game named Star Trek, for example. You know, that's a must.
Did you try any of the text adventures, Aaron?
I did. I did.
Could you get anywhere on them?
No, gosh, no.
Yeah, the commands. I mean, it really gives you a bit of a insight into more modern text adventures. Yeah. I were doing commands that made complete sense to me, like get or pick up, and they were like, "We don't know what you're talking about."
Yeah,
it's these like, were like, "What the, do you the, want?"
These were sort of like, they felt like they'd been poured over, like, directly from the old mainframes at the local college.
Yeah,
you know, that shtick.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say the games I saw, there's also very, very limited footage of anyone playing games. So all the footage they got is stuff I generated, except for this little blurb right here that someone put together. I would put these games somewhere, I would say, a step or two below the TRS-80 model 1 and 3 / Dick Smith's Super 80 or System 80. They're right there. They're not that far off. They're just, the resolution's a little lower. And the sound's not as good because there was no sound.
Right.
But they were better than I would have anticipated. In fact, I was surprised at the girth, the amount of games that were available for, you know, when you hear something is a kit computer from the 70s, like, my hopes were low.
Yeah.
And I will say this thing surpassed them in the ability to do anything. You know? Because you don't think about computers. And of course, if you think about it, the Atari computers come from the 70s, the 8-bits, and of course, they were awesome. So, you know, of course, you've got the jack of Atari behind it. This is basically put together by a dude.
Yeah.
But this thing was formidable. It was a decent little machine, you know?
It absolutely was.
And that was a surprise to me. I will say that was a big surprise. So, with all that in mind, Brent, let's go ahead and talk about what we ended up getting into. Now, tell the people how you stumbled across what we're going to talk about, and if they wanted to get it, it's available for anyone, right?
Yeah, I ended up in desperation. I try like gangbusters to avoid Java emulators, just because it's not an area that I'm real comfortable with, and if someone really wanted to screw up my day, they could do it and I wouldn't even know it.
It's Java. Enough said.
Yeah. So there are a couple Java emulators out there, but there was one particular one that has games already in the memory, already basically ready to go. And we were struggling so much with getting the games to be recognized, finding this was just a grail. It was an absolute holy grail.
And it actually had a couple games on it that I would have picked anyway, so it worked out pretty well. Yeah,
exactly. And so that's what we took a look at, and we still had to learn the commands, and they were actually very handily mapped out for you. There's a weird thing where you have to put a left bracket at the beginning of all your lines to do your commands. I don't know if that's standard or if that was something just having to do with the built-in stuff of this emulator, but I would have never, you know, thought to do that natively.
Yeah.
But
and of course there are different types of NASCOMs, and so they would take different commands. So it was also complicated.
Yeah.
You know. So it.
But we got there.
We got there.
Always do.
So what we're gonna do is just sort of discuss these, and talk about them. So let's go ahead, Britt. Which one would you like to tackle first?
Well, did you actually capture footage from Tic-Tac-Toe?
I did.
Let's go ahead.
I didn't know. Not Tic-Tac-Toe. I didn't bother with
Tic-Tac-Toe
that one.
Tic-Tac-Toe is exactly what you would think. It's a big screen with Tic-Tac-Toe, and you can play against a computer or another player. It's Tic-Tac-Toe. There's not a whole lot more to say about it.
Yeah, that one I skipped over, I'd say. Even that one was a little bit too basic for me. So which one would you like to start with?
Let's fire up Asteroids.
Okay.
Asteroids was really impressive.
So... Asteroids, now this may stun some of you, but this is a Steven Weller game. As you can see, the level 9 computer, they came up a lot.
Absolutely.
This is from 82, as it said there. And what you've got here is a very low resolution version of Asteroids. Now, I'll tell you, when this came up, this is funny because this is actually the first game I tried out. And man, I was pretty impressed.
It reminds you of Asteroids on the Atari 2600. At least it did me.
Well, I mean, first of all, this is me playing at a much higher level than start, but the ability for the Asteroids to split off and to move in their own directions was cool. It had everything that you would expect Asteroids to have.
Yep.
I will say the one thing about a lot of these games is they had real wacky control.
This was completely controlled with up, down, left, right.
Yeah, this you can see right here. I kept this in. If you're watching at home, this is me actually loading up the game. You have to put the bracket in. But the Asteroids, they gave you the left, right. You've got your thrust and you've got hyperspace there, which is nice. And the ability to start at whatever level you want, which is nice.
Yeah, because now, one is really slow.
Do you know, did you notice if these games had been sold or were these all just gimmies? I mean, I'm assuming these were all things that you would just pass around.
I can't imagine there would be a market for these to be sold. I certainly did not see anywhere where there was box art or anything like that.
Well,
if they were sold, I did not see it.
I looked over a lot of the games, and I'd heard of some of the people that made the game. So
yes, absolutely.
I would assume there may have been some sort of market for buying these. I just don't know. No one was really talking about it. But yeah, getting back to Asteroids, plays great. I mean, your ship is obviously tiny, but I mean, it plays just like you would expect. The hyperspace works just like you would expect. The Asteroids bust up just like you would expect. In fact, they would bust into smaller pieces than I would have thought. Like right there, I'd say your second level in, that'd be pretty small, but they actually break again, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
The controls, I struggled mightily, though. The way they've got it rigged up was really goofy with your arrow keys doing bizarre. I didn't like the way they had it set up.
You would think turn left and right would be left and right, but it's right. Not. It's left and up.
Yeah. And so I kept thrusting when I wanted to turn. And so that would drive me nuts. What did you think of this one?
I really enjoyed it. I'm not a huge Asteroid fan, right? Just not my game for whatever reason. However, I think that this captures everything that you would want from the game. And it's 100% playable. I mean, if you wanted to play a game of Asteroids and this was what you had, you would be satisfied.
Yeah. I think Steven Weller did a good job there.
Excellent job. Absolutely. Yeah.
So if you want to play some Asteroids on your NASCOM, you got a winner here.
Absolutely.
Britt, let's move on to Cycles. This game actually had a couple names, but we call it Cycles. They call it Surround when you load it up. This is another level 9 game. Brent. This is basically Snake, or that's not true. It's more like
Tron Light Cycles.
Light Cycles. I like the fact that your character just stands still and just he just moves around, and light comes out of his hiney.
Or his face, depending on which way you're facing.
Yeah. This is a game where you compete against either the computer or another player. Hey, how about that, Britt? Two-player action on the NASCOM. And you've got, you could pick your speed level. The speed levels on this range from, like, doable to, are you kidding me?
If you try to play this, I was able to beat all the way up to level 8.
Really?
Level 9, you just instantly die. There's I don't think it's physically possible to, and that was running at four hertz.
Yeah. Now this wasn't as graphically impressive as Asteroids or as fun.
Not. No.
But the controls did make more sense. Thankfully, you could actually do something with it. But this is just a real basic. This is easily the most basic of the games we looked at. It's just straight up Light Cycle. But it's okay. I'll give it points for
functions.
Two players. I do like the fact that when you exit, it thanks you for playing its game and tells you to have a nice day. It's a polite game of Tron Light Cycle. So,
I mean, the controls were usually responsive. You do have to hit the key. When your guy is making the movement, you can't hit the key. It won't register. It was okay. I enjoy that it allowed 9 levels of speed. I just would have liked something different for your icon than a person, especially if the other enemy was some kind of humanoid shape. I think it would have been okay, but it was a club like you see on a deck of cards.
He looks more like the Ace of Spades.
It could certainly be a spade as well. It's kind of that in between.
I just wanted to sing that too. We love you, Remy.
This one I did not actually play much of at all.
Yeah, it didn't take many plays of this one. Now, Brent, here's one that I struggled with, but I think you really enjoyed. The old Piranha, Brent. Now, tell the people, I'll let you run the show on this. Tell the people about Piranha here.
Piranha is a game where the story is that you've fallen into the Amazon River and you've got to avoid these piranhas that are attacking you.
I hate when that happens.
And apparently, if the piranhas run into each other, they'll eat each other. So you can get away from them that way. This is obviously a one-screen game. You start in the center and you have the entire screen to run around. There are no obstacles themselves on the screen except for the piranhas. And the piranhas will come from all sides of the screen in any possible border starting location and swim towards you. As they swim, they will kind of bunch up and make it a little bit harder to dodge. And if you can get them to run into themselves, they will disappear and you'll get more points for it. And this is a points game. Something very unique of this is... if you double tap, your character moves twice the speed. So it gives you an extra level of maneuverability. Very nice. Very nice there. Also, you can hit, after you score so many points, you can hit A and turn on autopilot. And the game will play itself.
That was strange.
It will play itself flawlessly. You can't just rely on it forever.
Yeah.
But... You can step away for a moment and it will play itself and run around itself.
I've never seen a game that did that. it's very strange. Can you explain? I had trouble understanding the concepts here of what you needed to do exactly.
Avoid. It's all about just avoiding.
How long does your poor guy have to stay in the river?
Forever.
Then why are you struggling to survive? Yourself die.
No. It's a point game. So you play for high score. And the longer the game goes on, the more piranha that are released into the river. Yeah. And like I said, you eventually have to get them to collide with each other. And they're smart. They're smart enough that they don't want to collide with each other. different levels will go, is different speeds worth of the game. And it's, I had a lot of fun with this. Being able to double tap to get that extra movement speed, it sends you just over the edge of out of control. But sometimes you have to do it. And this game lets you move in all eight directions. You know, you're up, down, left, right, and all the diagonals by hitting both keys together. And it feels good. The controls are very responsive. And you really need that responsiveness because when you get a lot of piranhas, which are just represented as asterisks, when you get a lot of them on the screen, I mean, I probably had 15 or 20 of them on the screen at one time.
Yeah.
Swimming around in circles, avoiding them. And when they hit and blow up, you can actually blow up more than just two at a time. You can blow up whole chunks of them at a time and get huge score. So I really enjoyed this game. This was probably my favorite of the bunch, even though it wasn't necessarily graphically the best. I feel like it played the best.
You can see if you're watching at home, there's a little A up beside my score. That means it's on autopilot.
Yeah. Yeah. That A does not stand for Aaron.
No, it doesn't. Because you can see once I turned that on, it went from meandering idiot to super god of the water, like Tarzan. But yeah, this is definitely the most clever, most original title that we looked at.
Yeah.
It wasn't my favorite, but because I had trouble with it, but it was still pretty good. And it's certainly very playable and unique. I'd say this is if you're going to play any of these games, this is probably the one you're going to want to try out, man. I thought this was pretty good. So I thought that was a winner. So the last game we looked at, you listen, every old, incredibly old system, they got to have one thing, don't they, bro? Well, you got to have two things. You've got to have your classic games on here, your Space Invaders, your Pac-Mans, your Asteroids, and of course, you got to have Scramble.
Yeah.
Scramble, one of my favorite games, and a game that I really enjoy, you know, this and Cobra, Super Cobra, all the fun games from back in the day. This one is probably, would you say this is the most graphically interesting game we looked at?
Absolutely.
We'll say I'm not real keen on the way your ship looks, but
I think it looks good.
Well, it looks kind of iffy to me, man.
No, I think it looks good. You got to remember what you're working with, man.
Right, right. This is your classic scramble game, except for the fact that this thing was hard as heck to control. The control keys are this is like, remember when you used to play Defender in the arcade? You had like 50 buttons there. That's the way I felt playing this. You're tapping crap to shoot. You're tapping crap to drop the bombs. Then you've got the four directions, and it was tough. That's a lot of button tapping. This game would have done well on a joystick at the time.
I'll tell you right now, I'm watching your demo play footage, right?
Yeah.
You're playing completely wrong.
Well, no kidding. I'm struggling with the controls here.
This is probably, even though I enjoyed Piranha the most, Scramble is definitely the game I played the most. And you have got to get into the ravines and use your forward shooting gun.
Yeah.
You cannot rely on your bombs.
You notice, by the way, when this came through, I just wanted to hop in. This was called, we've got it listed as Scramble, but actually, from what the game says, this game is called, I think it was called Raider. Did you see that as a
yes.
pop? I just noticed that.
Yes.
I didn't even notice that last night when I was playing it. So if you're looking for this one, you'll probably, although it was listed as Scramble, and that's the funny thing about these games, they don't screw around with their fake names. When you're loading these things, they're called Asteroids, they call them what they're cloning, effectively.
Yeah.
But this one, if you're looking for it, looks like it's called Raider.
Yeah.
So
go
ahead.
When you play this, you could run out of fuel, just like
what
you'd expect. Bombing fuel is incredibly difficult. You have to get in the trenches. You have to fly down into the valleys and shoot your fuel. It's the only way to survive past 500 clicks. I really, really enjoyed the challenge of this game. I was able to feel myself improve. I was getting farther and farther. I really wanted to see if it had the actual cave sections you know, yeah, where you have got.
Oh man, that'd be tough.
I went very, very far, very, yeah, very far into the game, and I was never able to get that to happen. Something to mention that was brought up in chat is, while our cardinal directions up, down, left, right on a modern keyboard are T-shaped, on the setup of the NASCOM, they weren't. They were in a square. So that's why the up, or the left and up, was left and right in Asteroids.
And that happens on a lot of
on the NASCOM, like it made sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I just assumed that. Yeah, because that happens quite often on those older
machines. And thank you, Frodo, for pointing
machines.
That out. And that is definitely worth mentioning.
Yeah. I
Scramble
thought
did not use arrow keys. It used letter keys.
Yeah.
And so did Piranha.
Yeah. And actually, that worked out pretty well. This one, the key setup that was particularly goofy. That's why this was not like this.
You know,
too
it
much
didn't bother me. Once this I got like, used to it, the Scramble game did not bother me.
One thing I do want to point out as this thing flies by here is look at the level of detail on the actual line that makes up the hillside.
Yes. It's magnificent.
It's a smooth, I mean, they did a great job.
Yeah.
With that. I mean, it looks nice, and you could certainly see where you could put together any sort of like a lunar lander or something. I mean, it looks good. It's almost a Vectrix-like in a way. You've got that kind of Vectory looking line, and the scrolling is fairly smooth. You know, this, I'll have to say, Brent, I had the same feeling when we tried out the Dick Smith System 80, is that you wouldn't think a game of this age would be able to, or a system like this would be able to do anything like this. It always blows my mind. I mean, we were looking at some pretty tight graphics for 1980, you know, this looked nice. I mean, it's just, you've got something here, and you've also probably got some pretty darn talented programmers.
Did
you
mess with the megahertz on this? I Scramble down.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I played it on a slower system and and it's obviously jerkier. But I
much
had
like yourself.
A better experience overall with it. At the speed it runs, I think natively we played everything at 4. I slowed it down to 2, and it played easier.
Well, duh. So what you're saying is, you were talking about how great and how far you got in this. You cheated. You turned the system speed down.
No. Here's the thing, though, Aaron. It plays slower, but it also plays jerkier.
That, like I said, that explains the compatibility there. But my point is, listen, I could slow down any game to play it frame by frame. I'd be some kind of super god.
No.
So basically, I'm declaring myself champion of normal speed Raider.
No, Brent, I definitely played it at both. I definitely played it at...
Frodo's standing up for you in the chat. Come on, Frodo. Listen, you got to man up. Play this thing at full speed, yo. Give me that crap.
Aaron wants to play it on a system that didn't exist. I got it.
Take off.
Regardless, this was an incredibly impressive thing. I would have been 3 when this came out. So I obviously could not have appreciated it as a child. But in my adult years, looking back at where computers have come from and where they are today, it's absolutely amazing. It's absolutely amazing that someone took the time to start from here. Because if we didn't have a start, we would never be where we are today.
Yes.
And my big hats off to these guys who really soldiered through during these NASCOM type eras and allowed us to get to where we are today.
You know, just in closing, I will say that the struggle, it's funny because Frodo was just saying that, like, he was like, we know we had trouble. I had to be able to work on last Sunday. I was like, well, that's a kick in the pants. But the one thing about the struggle, like, oh, we're dumb guys. Frodo's a genius. But the one thing about the struggle is I learned a ton. I was in there hacking away in the, trying with commands. I feel like I got closer to this machine than I probably should have, trying to load stuff. I was doing stuff with the cassette. I was putting on additional stuff that had been put in. and doing a lot of research on it. And I had to say, once again, your stupidity, your rambunctiousness to put pieces on the wheel actually paid off, because much like last week with the Civico, I actually enjoyed this probably more than I had any right to, because it was a good time, a very good time.
Hey, you know, the wheel doesn't steer us wrong, Aaron. It knows what we need and when we need it.
You know, when you utter its name, it doth appear.
Oh.
Bam, here it comes. Brent, this week we've made some additions. We've got the, as our retro rewind piece, I've stuck back on the Jupiter Ace. You know, that was one of our more popular episodes, Brent, the old Jupiter Ace.
Absolutely.
Who'd have figured it, man? And as our new piece this week, we have stuck on, this is controversial, Brent. You've just called this one Amiga versus Atari ST. This will be one of these Battle of the System type gimmicks, I assume. So anything could happen. Brent, tell me about these locked pieces, my friend.
We have three locked pieces from the Fallen shows, and they will stay on the wheel even if they are spun, and they will stay on the wheel at least until Thanksgiving, and we might even keep them on longer than that. Unfortunately, two of those locked pieces have yet to been spun. I think today we're going to hit one, though.
All right, Brent, I'm going to spin this sucker. Here we go. All right, this thing's spinning. It was a good spin this week. What are we going to get? Here it is. And it is... Oh, no. It's Bizarro Spin, Brent.
Oh, okay.
Brent, tell everyone what that means. And also, because I don't remember. What does that mean?
Bizarro Spin means we're going to spin it again, and we are going to pick games for each other to review.
Holy smokes.
So whatever it comes up on, I will be picking Aaron's game, and Aaron will be picking my game.
All right. Well, this is where we basically hose each other.
That's it.
All right. This has only come up once ever, had the old Bizarro
Twice,
Spin.
Twice, I believe.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. We'll spin it again. What if Bizarro Spin comes up again, Brent?
I guess they switch back.
Oh, no. Oh, no. It's the Atari 1200XL Atari locked piece, Brent.
Bam.
Bam. It's Atari time.
I felt it.
You felt that?
I did. I told you, locked piece time.
So what that means is...
We will be taking a look at the Atari 1200 again.
And we'll be giving each other the game.
That's right.
Interesting. Now, we haven't looked at the Atari 8-bit for a long time on this show. In fact, because that's the very first episode of ARG Presents was an Atari 8-bit show where we covered Caverns of Mars, I believe was the title. So that will be fun to go back to. And we will be picking each other's games, bro. We have a deadline on that Tuesday, it sounds good, or to pick each other's
Wednesday,
games.
Wednesday at the latest. Wednesday's usually the day we give ourselves.
Very good, very good. So this is where we wrap this sucker up. Brad, do you want to give any shout-outs or any information out there?
I want to say hello to a few people in chat. We've got Roushies, Pixels at Dawn, Frodo, Hermsky, making a late appearance, but a welcome appearance as always. Mitsuyama. We got the Bass. We got Dave Velociraptor. And let me just real quick pop in and say hello to some of our lurkers. Co-Brian. We've got Hamo1. And let's grab one more here from the bottom of the list. Vertigo Prozy, or Proz, perhaps.
Very good. Very good. Thanks, everybody, for checking us out today. We appreciate that, Brent. Any final thoughts before we put this sucker to bed?
You know, it was a rough week, but I really... These are the kind of weeks that I'm going to really remember, because this is a system I'd never heard about, and learned so much, and learned a lot of respect for the people of this era. So I'm glad it got spun. I really am.
Very good, very good. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We appreciate you all, and we will catch you again next week for Bizarro Atari 1200XL. Have a good week, everybody.
Have a good one, guys. Thanks for joining us today. We really hope you enjoyed the show. Quick shout out to all of our YouTube subscribers and Twitch followers. A special thank you to Duncan Styles for our vector graphics and BartBit for our amazing music. Would you like to keep ARG spinning for as little as a dollar a month? You can do so at anchor.fm/ARG-presents. Supporters get entry into the Amigos Discord channel, as well as their name called out in the credits. Supporters like these fine folks: Z9K9, Anthony Jarvis, Graham W. Vetke, Terry Howard, Gary Heather, John Schaller, The Slow Norris, Frodo NL, Steve Rasmussen, Chris Folds, Mitsuyama, Retroalogy, Permsky, John Deckman, and Jerry Dennington. Don't want to explain another credit card bill? That's okay too. You can help us out by leaving us a positive review on Spotify and Apple iTunes. Have an idea for a wheel piece? Send it to us at argpresents@mail.com. We record live every Sunday at 9 a.m. EDT on Twitch. Hope to see you there.